Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It is prematurely Gulf summer, maybe. But it's a beautiful day nonetheless. I enjoyed the weather yesterday. It was, made me feel, you know, something was weird. I was outside and I was working hard, worked most of the day in the yard. And I'm thinking, you know, something's crazy, weird, something ain't right. What's wrong? There were no mosquitoes. You know, I don't know if you've noticed. We don't notice these things until, you know, we only notice them when we can complain about them. We don't notice their absence. I'm the same way. And suddenly I was saying, you know, something's not right here. What's wrong? There wasn't no mosquitoes. Felt kind of alone in the yard, you know. I always got a few mosquitoes with me. But they weren't there. It's been dry. Some of us got a little rain. I won't rub it in. I know that some people did not get rain yesterday or didn't get much. But, boy, it was nice. It was nice. And suddenly I felt like I was, it felt like Mobile. My hat was wet. My shirt was wet. My pants were wet. My shoes were wet. My socks were wet. My whole body was just sopping wet, you know. That's the way it's supposed to feel in Mobile. But we do have these little episodes during American summer, and we're in the midst of one. I think it'll break next week, but we've been in the midst of one where we get these long dry spells. It's the thing I warn you about. You know, we kind of get lulled into it, but we had a long dry spell. It's been hot. Some of the hottest days of the year occur this time of year. And that's about what's going to happen today. They thought it was going to get maybe a degree or two hotter than it is, but it's still going to be, what, 96 not good enough for you? So, 90s, mid-90s, mid to upper 90s in some places. So it's going to be hot, but it's Gulf summer. It's American summer, and that's the way it's supposed to be. We're still going to get some cool nights that will allow your tomatoes to set fruit. We're beginning to trend towards those really hot nights when your tomatoes don't set as many fruit. But there'll still be a little bit of windows. I know some of you feel like you got plenty of tomatoes already, and that's all right. It's been a good American summer for tomatoes simply because it's been dry. I don't know if you've thought about that. But your tomatoes are probably doing pretty good right now, better than most years, simply because it's been dry. Listen, so I have this subject today. I'm going to address it. Folks are always, you know, I get these little comments from all the time to time about, listen, can you tell me, I bet you know a lot about this. I bet you can tell me how to grow marijuana. And I get those comments all the time. And let me tell you, I do know a thing or two about it. I'll tell you, I have never grown marijuana, personally. I've seen it done, as people like to say. And I do have some advice on it, and based on what I've seen other people do and what people who do grow it commercially tell me about it. And I will tell you, but I don't grow it myself, and there are many reasons why I don't grow it. And it's not, you know, I've grown other illicit drug-producing plants in my yard, along with many other Mobilians in the old days. You know, we all used to grow poppies, good old opium poppies. They were beautiful, and it was a tradition in the South to grow them, not so much because anybody was making opium from them anymore, thank goodness. But because they were beautiful. And I've grown Brugmansia, angel's trumpets. You've probably grown angel's trumpets too. And boy, don't you ever. Don't ever. Don't ever. But yeah. So I grow those for reasons. But I don't grow marijuana. I have no reason to. There are many reasons why. But one of the biggest reasons I don't grow marijuana, and I'll tell you, it's just, and why I wouldn't even try, it's so hard to do it here. It's just so hard to do it here. The people who are really successful at it, how do they do it? You know, marijuana is from, and I'm getting to the, you hold on here, because we're going to be talking about why I'm talking about this. So, marijuana, it's from Central Asia. It's from dry parts of the world, places that are dry, that have relatively cool summers, not droughty summers necessarily, but cool summers that are somewhat dry. 30 inches of rain, we get twice that. 20 to 30 inches of rain. That's considered a lot of rain in most, but that's where it's from. And that's where it grows well. And that's why it's a big crop. That's why it's from Russia. It's from Europe. This is the places where marijuana came from and hemp. So the people who are growing it nowadays, who are growing it in the South, they're growing it in warehouses. They're growing it in greenhouses so they can control the climate, so they can air condition it. Because it's the only way they can avoid some of the problems and get the kind of control they want to produce, all the THCs and all that funny stuff that people do. So here it is. This is the reason why I'm talking about this. Because right now, there was an article in the press today, and I'm hearing more and more about it, is this craziness. It's like people have been getting high on hemp. Hemp is going to save the world, folks. The Alabama legislature passed an act that allowed Alabamians to sell licenses to grow hemp. Hemp is the industrialized version of marijuana. It doesn't have it doesn't have THC. It doesn't have the active ingredient that makes people funny and giddy. It has some uses. It's always had some uses. In fact, it's been grown. There's 200 or 300,000 acres of it grown across the planet. There's less of it grown than there is of linen. That's how big the demand is.
Isn't hemp rope?
And it can be made into rope and to other things. It can be made into fabrics. But here's the thing. You go on the internet right now, and there are stories everywhere that's saying hemp's going to save the planet. Hemp is going to save Alabama. And I'm listening to people, I don't know how to describe it, sort of Range Rover farmers. Does that make sense to you? You know what a Range Rover farmer is? I'll let you think about that. Range Rover farmers, and they're talking about, man, I'm going to invest in some hemp. These are the same people who said, man, I'm going to speculate on some cotton. It's going to save Alabama. It ain't going to happen, folks. I'm just giving you a warning. One, the same problems that marijuana faces in growing it in Alabama. And you can grow it, not high quality stuff, but you can grow some outside. But it's not an easy crop in Alabama for a lot of reasons. It has all the problems that every other crop has in Alabama. It's not going to save the planet. It's not going to save the world, neither marijuana nor hemp. We keep forgetting in Alabama that one plant is not going to save the planet. That one plant is not going to save Alabama. And we got all these folks saying, look, I'm growing hemp because it's going to save the rural areas of Alabama. It's going to alleviate poverty in Alabama. Folks, it ain't going to do any such of a thing. It won't do any such of a thing. No more than every single maniacal crop that we've ever grown in Alabama, whether it was cotton or peanuts or corn, saved Alabama. What will save Alabama? The only thing that will save Alabama in the end is understanding Alabama, which is something we've had a real hard time doing. We're always importing some plant from some other place that's going to save Alabama, and it never does. I've lived through the emus. You remember the emus? You don't know. I have to live through these things because everybody's always got some new thing that's going to... Emus were going to save Alabama. Arundo, whatever Arundo is, you don't know what Arundo is. It's a grass. Arundo is going to save the Black Belt. Oh, no, it's going to be... Bamboo is going to save the planet. It's going to save Alabama. Hemp is going to save Alabama. It ain't going to do it, folks. For all the reasons that cotton didn't and peanuts didn't and corn didn't and soybeans didn't and emus didn't, it just won't do it. We're going to talk about a little bit about how you approach agriculture in a place like Alabama, because it's a lot like how you need to think about gardening. We're going to do that when we come back. I hope I didn't scare you away from hemp, but I meant to.
Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. It's Sunday morning. And, I don't know whether I sound to you like a stoner or Jeff Sessions. I'm going to leave that for you to figure out.
Is that a choice?
That's the choice. But here's the thing, I'm not. I'll tell you, I'm not. I'm not particularly high on pot. I'll just say that right out loud. I'm not particularly high on making it legal or illegal. But there is in Alabama a tendency, and maybe it's just maybe. So I'm trying to figure out this hemp thing. Hemp is a relative of marijuana. It does not have the. It is actually the same species. Cannabis sativa. It just doesn't have the THC levels in it that it's been bred so that THC levels, tetrahydrochloro, whatever, cannabinol, so that those levels are very low in the industrial hemp. And now everybody's really fascinated with it, and it's just, I hear people talking about it all the time. And, of course, the newspapers being the newspapers. We don't have newspapers anymore. But the things that resemble newspapers, the old and now that have become digital, they're having stories about them, about the hemp. And there's a lot, it's generating a lot of interest. And so I think it's worthwhile talking about before we go too far down that road again, thinking that here's the interesting thing, and I just want to point this out. There is a, for people who want to save the planet, oh Lord help us, and think they can do it with one crop, get off the bus. That's all I can say. One plant cannot solve the problems of the world. The problems of our world are in large measure the result of thinking that one plant can solve the problems of the world. Now, we never found that plant, but we keep looking for it, and in the process, we keep making a mess. There are lots of things that hemp can be used for. I guess our fascination with hemp has to do with the fact that in Alabama, you know, we like to pretend we're straight-laced kind of folks. But the truth is, in Alabama, we kind of like doing illegal things. We kind of like feeling like we got by with something. Maybe it's because we have to be so straight-laced all the time that it's kind of nice just to think, oh, man, I'm getting away with something. So the legislature said, oh, we're going to let you grow hemp. It's all right if you grow hemp here in Alabama. And yes, it's related to marijuana, but we're going to give you a permit to grow it. And man, everybody just got giddy about it. So maybe that's the thing. But let's get sober. Let's get sober about it. Let's talk about rural areas. The rural areas in Alabama. Now, if you've got money and you've got a job in the city, you can go to the rural areas and you'll be okay. If you've got a good job, you got health care, all those nice things that come with a big job in the city. And you can have a little place in the rural areas and you can hire people for cheap because they can't do anything else except work for you. But rural areas in Alabama are declining. They're in bad shape. They're in tough shape. And they're in tough shape for a lot of reasons. One, they were developed around an agricultural model that depended on one big crop. One crop is going to save us. Cotton is going to save us. People made money on cotton, but only a very small number of people, and they don't make that much money on cotton anymore. In fact, the areas that grew cotton when cotton was king back in the 1850s, they don't grow cotton anymore because it destroyed the soils. The way they farmed it destroyed the soils. It wasn't just cotton. It would have been anything, corn, cotton, any single crop would have done it. But it just happened to be cotton. It's this, and here's the funny thing. Now we still have agriculture in Alabama, and it's corn, it's soybeans, it's a little bit of cotton, but it's one crop. And in fact, since 1978, the amazing thing in Alabama, and I've seen this all over the state, the records are there to show it. Since 1978. The number of crops grown in most places in Alabama has declined dramatically. We are growing far fewer crops now than we did in 1978. And I can tell you, I've seen it. I've seen it in Chilton County. I've seen it in – it's one of the few places that is still a holdout, and it won't be a holdout for long because the only thing Baldwin County is going to be growing before long is houses. But – Baldwin County was a holdout in that it had diversified agriculture, growing a variety of crops. You know, but most places in Alabama, they focused on one thing. And that means, so what do you do when you focus on one thing? Why do we focus on one thing? Because you can buy a big piece of machinery, and you can do the same thing acre after acre after acre after acre after acre after acre. Please believe me. I know it. I've scouted cotton. And you know what those big machines cost? You ever bought a Rolls Royce? The standard tractor that most people are using to grow cotton and corn, just the tractor alone, is going to cost you about what it's going to cost you to buy one of the most expensive Rolls Royces. This is not something people get into easily. And then you got to have the harvesting equipment. And then you got to have the combine, which is going to cost you another Rolls Royce. I mean, we're talking $500,000 for this equipment, for a single piece of equipment. It's very expensive. And when you've got a single piece of equipment, what are you going to do? You're going to minimize your investment in labor, and you're going to want to grow the same thing over and over because that piece of equipment isn't very smart, is it? And so it's only designed for one type of crop. And so you're stuck growing one type of crop. And so we've gotten ourselves into this pattern. And there's no employment in the rural areas because there's only one person who drives a tractor over thousands of acres. And he doesn't get paid very well. She doesn't get paid very well. This is the problem with agriculture. We have mechanized it. We've created robots. And so it's very difficult. You know what's going to happen if you grow hemp in the Black Belt, where it's not going to grow very well? I'll tell you why later. But if you were growing it there, what's going to happen to the poor people of the Black Belt, to one of the poorest parts of the country, which is in 1859 the richest part of the country, now one of the poorest areas of the country are in the Black Belt? What's going to happen to those people? They're going to live just like they're living now. Because hemp isn't going to provide any employment to them. If hemp is successful, Auburn will make it successful because they can mechanize it and create another single crop. They won't, because it's not going to grow well there. But you see what I'm saying? We're stuck on this. We got to change the way we think about agriculture if we're going to save rural areas. Rural areas are in a tough situation. Our policies for rural areas stink. They still stink, by the way. And rural areas are going down. I've seen it happen. And only a very few people can take advantage of it. I mean, a handful of people, six or, a half dozen people in a county may be making a lot of money. on these rural areas right now because they can afford to buy four or five Rolls Royces to grow the crops the way we're growing them now and the way we encourage it. I just got to say this, and I want to get it out there. And the next time somebody says, oh, man, hemp's going to save Alabama, do me a favor, laugh in their face for me, because it ain't going to do it. And the sooner we get over that, the better off we'll be. Yeah, you know, I say the same thing about gardening. You know, a lot of our problems come from the fact that, oh, I'm only going to grow one thing. I'm going to grow St. Augustine grass everywhere. I wonder why I got so many problems with my St. Augustine grass. God, why is it so hard? Why do I always have so many disease and insect problems? Why is it so hard? Let me find another grass that can replace St. Augustine. Another thing. All I got to do is find it. And then we get the other grass, and suddenly it has all the problems at St. Augustine. Why is that? You know, the one thing that's going to save Alabama is understanding Alabama. And Alabama is a pretty diverse place, and it's a diverse place for a reason. And we keep forgetting that over the years, whether we garden, whether we deal with our neighbors, whether we're growing a farm. It's a good thing to think about. Sorry about that this morning, but I just had to say it. Maybe some of you out there listening. Hey, we're going to talk a little bit more about your garden. We're going to talk about the things. Somebody has sent me a picture this morning of grass that has taken over the front lawn, as it will do. And it's growing in those, it's got its roots in those little things that, those little plastic things that are supposed to keep, weeds from coming in, which it just penetrates us. It's Bermuda grass. What I'm looking at is pretty clearly Bermuda grass. It's a weed. I do not recommend, trying to grow Bermuda grass here. The climate's not right for it, but it will become a weed, common Bermuda grass. I'll talk to you a little bit about how to get your St. Augustine to do a little better against that Bermuda grass. We'll talk a little bit about why the Bermuda grass wants to come in too. We'll come back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
The rain is falling through the mist. Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. I think I scared everybody off, Charlie. I may have.
We do have a phone line reserved for you if you want to call 343-0106.
So it's an interesting thing that I've been thinking about this morning, thinking about what would save Alabama in terms of agriculture. What do we do about the rural areas, and how do we rethink what's happening there? And it's a big problem. Been spending a lot more time out looking at rural areas across the state, doing good projects, having fun doing them. But I feel bad. I feel bad going through some of these areas because I recognize that, man, they've lost it. They've kind of lost it. Now, there are some people who are sort of finding their way back, and it's interesting. But let me, and I'm going to talk about those folks. I've seen them too. I've tasted their foods. But you know, it's really interesting. I went to a place in Central Alabama. I'll specify Central Alabama, that was once known for its vegetables and its vegetable crops, its strawberries and other things. And, you know, everybody's telling you got to buy locally grown stuff. You ought to buy locally grown stuff. So I thought, well, you know, I'm coming through here, and for the next 30 miles of interstate, this will be local. So let me stop by and see what they got. And I did, and it was the worst tasting strawberries I think I've ever put in my mouth. I mean, I'm telling you, they were so bad, and I know why they were so bad. They were so bad because somebody, I can't imagine who, was doing the consulting work and said, look, you want to make money on this. What you need to do is you need to mechanize this. You need to get your cost down. You need to have fruit that you can ship that is so hard. You need to have fruit that turns red even if it's not ripe. You need to have fruit that you can ship that is hard, that won't bruise during shipping. Don't worry about the taste. Don't worry about the sugar, because people don't buy that kind of stuff. They're going to buy Purdy in the grocery store. And that's what they did. And they grew stuff that will ship. But you know what that means is that you got no reason to buy local anymore. You got no reason to buy Alabama anymore. And these folks are going to be competing with people in Florida and in California who are growing strawberries just as tasteless as the ones in Alabama. And that means they can't charge a premium for the fruits from Alabama. And it means that we lose out. Those farmers lose out because they don't have anything special. They just got old rangy, old yucky, hard as rock, red Florida strawberries. That's all they got. How do we do tomatoes? Tomatoes used to be, you know, I used to say, go to Sand Mountain and buy the tomatoes. Go to Chandler Mountain and buy the tomatoes. I'm telling you, folks, I can't tell you that anymore. Because the tomatoes they're boxing up and shipping out with the Sand Mountain label on them, they aren't any better than, even in July, they're not any better than the tomatoes they pick in Florida during winter. It's just they're not any good anymore. Why is that? And it's because we've kind of gone with the lowest common denominator because we got a flawed model. And so what's happening is nobody's growing tomatoes in Sand Mountain anymore. A lot of people are out of the tomato business in Sand Mountain. And Sand Mountain, which used to be one of the most diverse agricultural areas in Alabama with a wide variety of crops. You know what people are growing in Sand Mountain right now? They're growing corn and soybeans, corn and soybeans, corn and soybeans, corn and soybeans.
Is that corn we can eat or feed corn?
No, it isn't corn you can eat. It's probably corn for biofuels. It is corn driven by government subsidies.
Ethanol.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
It's corn driven by government subsidies, folks.
What about Chilton and County peaches?
The pride we have in Alabama about not being, we are so dependent on the feds, and right now that corn is driven by the subsidies on ethanol.
Mm.
And which are essentially requirements on ethanol. You're actually paying for the subsidy on ethanol. I won't tell you how many different ways, but you are, not just through your taxes, but through your gasoline prices.
Well, Bill, tell me the peaches are still okay.
Peaches.
Chilton,
you don't want me to talk about peaches. You know, and it's another problem. You don't want me to talk about peaches either. There are some, but now, I've given you the bad news. So let me tell you some good news, and it's just beginning, and it is very hard for these people, but there are people who are doing it. You know, in Arlie Powell, I know he's doing a great job in Chilton County trying to diversify some of the peach varieties. Thinking hard about it, Arlie loves good fruit. I'm really pleased he and his son Jason have done a good job at Petals from the Past. They need your help. They need your understanding that diversification, that having diversity in the garden is a good thing. But they've done a good job. But you know, I was the other day. There's a farmer he's in North Alabama. And I stopped and got the strawberries. And I want you to know, those were the most incredible strawberries. I haven't had strawberries that good. I haven't had strawberries that good in, man, back in the days when Louisiana grew great strawberries. David, you remember when that was? I don't even know if I could find a good Louisiana strawberry anymore. But in the old days, Louisiana, you know, they were delicious. They were probably better than the Louisiana strawberries that I remember as a kid. They were absolutely delicious. You know, they were red all the way through. They were flavorful all the way through. They were tart. They were sweet. They were everything a strawberry should be. Absolutely incredible. And this guy, I mean, he is selling every strawberry he can pick. I'm seeing him down there, and he's, you know, he's not charging an exorbitant price, but he's doing okay. He's doing pretty good. Maggie Valley strawberries. I don't want to say that out loud because he might have to start shipping them, and then he'll lose his quality. But that's the way it was in those days, you know. You could go to a local farmer's market. Somebody was growing grapefruit for you, and boom, Maggie Valley strawberries. I want to tell you, they're great. They were absolutely incredible. We can be doing more of that. We could be doing more of that in Alabama and doing okay doing it. That's how we're going to save rural areas. It ain't going to be hemp. Maybe hemp plays a small role in certain areas. It will never, under any circumstance, play a big role in Alabama, I can tell you, based on what I know about the possibilities of growing marijuana in Alabama. It will never be a great crop in Alabama. It actually needs as much fertilization as corn. It doesn't like sandy soils, which is where a lot of our agriculture is right now. It has very low tolerance because the wet clay soils are too wet. It doesn't like rainfall. It doesn't like humidity. And maybe, you know, maybe somebody finds a small role for it. But it's not going to save Alabama. What saves Alabama is this diversity, the diversification of crops. It was why Baldwin County agriculture was successful for a long time, was diversification of crops. Diversity in Alabama, something to think about. Diversity in your garden, too. So why is this St. Augustine? Why is St. Augustine being invaded by Bermuda grass? Well, because in a place like Alabama, with a warm climate like Alabama, with all of the pathogens, let me define a pathogen for you. It's a disease. It's an insect. It's a fungus. It's a virus. It's all of these different things that are here because we do live in a warm climate with lots of rainfall that is very diverse with a very long growing season. When that happens, you can get lots of different pathogens, lots of bugs, lots of weeds, all these things. They're all going to come in there competing for space. They're part of the community. And so when you try to just make it about one thing, one plant, it's going to resist. Your lawn is going to, the ground is going to resist. The ecosystem is going to resist. Your lawn is going to resist, your garden's going to resist, and you're going to get weeds coming in. You can help if you've got St. Augustine. You're always going to have a few weeds in it. It's impossible to grow a lawn over so as many acres as we grow a lawn without having weeds in it. It is impossible because it's just, I mean, either you're, and it's impossible because the grass that you want to have is going to die. Not because of competition from the weeds, but because of the diseases and other things that are going to find it an easy target because there's nothing else there. It's like having a big bullseye, if you will. And it makes it easy for these grasses to become targets because there's nothing else but these grasses. But with the St. Augustine, one of the things you can do to discourage the Bermuda grass, will be the least of your problems. You'll always be there a little bit. But if you raise your mower with the St. Augustine grass to 4 inches, Bermuda grass is not going to tolerate that well at all. Anywhere your St. Augustine grass disappears because there's a disease or a pathogen or nematodes or something else, fungus, that is attacking the grass, that is attacking the St. Augustine, yeah, you're going to get little pockets where the St. Augustine dies and something's going to come in and fill the void. But as long as your St. Augustine grass is healthy, it's not always an easy thing. It's never easy with any grass. It's never perfect. As long as your St. Augustine grass is healthy and about 4 inches high, you're not going to have any problems with Bermuda grass. There it is. All right, so give me a call. 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. Let's talk about your tomatoes. Let's talk about how things look in your garden right now. Let's talk about this heat. Let's talk about the rain. Let's talk about whether you're going to get it. We're in the midst of a lot of us are in the midst of a stage one, maybe coming close to a stage two drought. You better hope we get some rain this weekend. If your yard is pretty dry right now, and mine is, I lost some plants. I'm probably losing some plants that I had in containers because I wasn't able to get to them for a week or two. You may be doing that too. Let's talk about how to water when we come back.
For the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Back, it's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Look, I thought this was the last day I ever used the word hemp out loud because I didn't heard anything.
Maybe technology just
went
away.
But I think our technology has gotten in our way here. So if you sent me a text, I didn't get it.
Yeah, so
resend. Last text I got was at 9:03, and I thought, man, I better not talk about that again.
Whew. Thought you scared everybody off?
Scared everybody off.
Hey, I want to ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Related to your topic. Back in the day when I worked as a news reporter, periodically I'd run into some legislator and moaning and groaning and saying, you know, it's the rural folks in the legislature that control everything because they outnumber the cities. And if that's the case, I mean, is that the case still? And if so, why is the state apparently ignoring a lot of the rural areas or the issues they're facing?
Yeah, could it be because the people in the rural areas don't have a vision because they're trying to make the rural areas look like the rural areas looked in the 1850s?
Yeah. So in other words, you're saying you've got to
adopt. Work. It works for a handful of people. And they're the people who have the money to get elected. But it doesn't work for most of the population. And, in a place like Alabama, representation, and I mean, it happens. A lot of that representation comes from rural areas, not all of it.
A good bit of it, though.
But a good bit of it. And that happens in the United States, too. If you think about it, the Senate is overrepresented by people from rural areas. But who are those people? They're people like, well, you know who they are. No, you don't, because you don't know who's in the Senate. But they're people.
Are they ignoring the needs of the rural areas?
What do Alabama senators know about agriculture and rural areas? Even though Alabama is an agricultural state, it should be overrepresented in the federal. This is technical. But
no, I'm not getting into politics so much.
I didn't mean to.
But it seems like that, and I've got relatives that live out in the country, and it seems like those areas are just being ignored.
Yeah, they are. But there is no – because we keep trying to make the rural areas look like they looked – back when there was agricultural employment, and we can't do it, or back when there were textile mills where people didn't get paid, where my grandmother worked at a blue jean factory, at an overall factory.
That doesn't exist now.
They don't do that. And boy, did she made almost nothing. She died, she had emphysema when she died from the mills, from the conditions in the mill. And from all the cotton dust. So this is why we can't, we've got to come up with a model. And I don't say it has to be, you know, it's a different model than the one we're used to, where one thing is going to come in. It's going to be an auto plant. That's what people in rural areas look for. They're looking for auto plants. And, you know, can I say one thing about auto plants? The use of automobiles worldwide is declining precipitously right now. The number of automobiles sold nationally declined. With the economy going great guns, it declined something like 15 to 20%
wow,
globally. And what are we doing in Alabama? We're looking for another auto plant. Because that's where we are. That's where our heads are. There's going to be one thing, and it's going to look like something that people looked for. We want Alabama to be the next Detroit. Do you know what Detroit looks like now? What does Detroit look like now?
Well, probably a lot of wasted space.
And that's the way it works. Hey, we got a caller. Joel, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, my daughter and I were out for a walk the other day, and she found some trimmings off of a citrus tree, you know, somebody had out by the yard, and it had ripe, nice, sweet, what seemed to be navel oranges. And I just wasn't aware that navel oranges, you know, I've always seen them in November around here, and I was just curious if that's what they were or if there's another type of citrus that fruits this time of year around here.
No, in fact, navel oranges and most oranges and many grapefruit, the real season for picking those in places that grow them well and where the flavor is in February, March, April, and May. Not, and we're, you can go into June, but February, March, April, and May are the real seasons, peak seasons for citrus, and into June and July. And we pick them early because we're afraid of them freezing on the tree, and therefore the quality is not that good when we pick them early. You really should let them go over the winter. The problem with that is that if we have a regular winter, it freezes the fruit. But we didn't have a regular winter this year.
Nope.
We had a very mild winter. So the fruit survived.
Well,
somebody
sense.
Forgot to pick it, and the fruit hung on, and it developed really, it should be really good flavor, right?
It was excellent. Very, very sweet.
Why would they cut them off and leave the fruit on the trimmings? That's the part I don't understand.
I don't know. They probably thought
they
were no good because they were late.
Or maybe they had too many fruit.
Yeah, so that's what it was. It was. Now, let me tell you, can I just put in a plug for thinking locally and thinking about Mobile and what we do well? I don't think we do navels that well because, one, they do require a long winter that is very mild to really develop peak flavor. We grew an orange called Hamlin, H-A-M-L-I-N. Our Louisiana Sweet is another one that's very similar, if not identical. And those two oranges develop their peak sugars that will compete with the best navel you've ever had, probably better. They develop their peak sugars in December, in November and December. So you eat a Hamlin orange in December, which is the perfect for our climate, and it is absolutely incredible. But no, because we got to grow what people in other parts of the world are growing. We got to grow what Florida's growing. So we grow navels. And about once every 15 years, you're going to eat a really good navel orange here in Mobile. And you just did it.
Well, that explains. I've never had a good navel orange here. So.
That's it. So it's it. They like to be picked later in the year. That's when they develop their sugars and not late. You know, they need that overwintering period, February, March, April, May, really peak flavor for most navels. And there it is. You got it. Try Hamlin, though, man. If you ever have a chance, get a Hamlin. Boy, they are so good. Or a Louisiana Sweet. Man, you talk about picking them in December. They are unbelievably good.
Well, thank you very much.
Joel, good to hear from you. Well, that's good. You know, that's good. And so it's funny, isn't it? So people think that the oranges that are still on the trees, something's got to be wrong with them. Now, if it was a tangerine, if it were a satsuma and it were still on the tree, it wouldn't be. They would not be that good this time of year. But oranges, grapefruit, this is why I don't see that Mobile is a great grapefruit growing area. Yeah, you can do it, but it needs a warm winter. It needs consistently warm winters to do it. if you're growing grapefruit, I will tell you one thing, and you believe that it's going to be really good climate for it, you believe in climate change. You believe climate change is happening faster than I believe it's happening. Because we don't have winters consistently warm enough to have good grapefruit that you pick in late January, February, March, April. That's when grapefruit have great flavors. That's what they do in Florida in the grapefruit growing regions. And then the ones that they have to pick and get off the tree, they put in warehouses so you'll have them the rest of the year. There it is. Something to think about. Understanding our climate, it's too bad that they, you know, I'd have liked to have tried those navels too, Joel. I wish I'd happened by. And those poor souls who cut them off and threw them away because they thought, well, they can't be any good anymore. Well, they're at their peak flavor right now. Hey, we're going to be back. We are going to talk about watering when we come back because I think you're going to need it. We got a break. We got some news. We're going to have our technology back. Talk to you in a minute.